The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's Good Friday, unless you're the Phoenix Suns. Thanks for being with us. We have a cool show today. Tim Mickelson will be with us. Tim, of course, Phil's brother and Phil's caddy, winning the PGA Championship, walking us through the changes with Phil. Tim Mickelson, who's on the bag, the former ASU golf coach. You know, I don't know if you know Tim's story. He had to walk away from John Rahm. He was going to be John Rahm's agent, actually was his agent for a bit. And then Phil came along and said, I need you, brother. Come on, let's step up here. So I talked to him about that and everything that's happened in Phil's world there in Dallas. And we'll have Phil Mickelson's brother, Tim, at 10:20. Leandro Barbosa is going to drop in today. The Brazilian blur, as Al McCoy loved to call him. Leandro, of course, a fan favorite. He's part of the Golden State Warriors staff. He is actually going to go back out on the basketball court playing in the Big Three basketball league starting in July. And I want to have Leandro on to talk about what is he doing, why that, and in general, how Leandro Barbosa is doing, his time with the Suns, who made the biggest difference with him. We'll do all that with Leandro Barbosa. That comes up here at about 10:35-ish. That is straight ahead. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. You can't complain about officials all day long. I mean, it may make you feel good. It may make you, excitable and get it out of your system and say the refs have it in for us here in Phoenix. I don't believe that to be the case, that they have it in for the Suns. I just think the Lakers are going to get more calls because they are the defending champions, and that's how it works when you're a team that hasn't been in the playoffs in a long time. People like to hear that. Chris Paul has every right to complain that if Scott Foster walks out the hall. But guys, it's no different than Charles Barkley saying, I got Steve Javi out here tonight. Nothing's changed in that. I know this to be true through seeing this through the years. There's always going to be a side where people say the refs have it in for us here in Phoenix. That's just how it is. We're not a big market. We're not. Nothing's changed, though. Complaining about referees just becomes, after a while, for me, tiring. I tend to look at what goes on the inside when there's 58 points in the paint and the Lakers score 109. Over half their points are in the paint. Is that because they're camping out? No, I didn't think they camped out last night. They did camp out, in my opinion, in game two. But last night had nothing at all to do with camping in the key. It had everything to do with just being slapped around out on the court. Jay Crowder tried. I have no problem with Jay Crowder. I thought Devin Booker's foul was a little excessive. Devin Booker's got a chip on his shoulder when he plays. He got a tech. He got thrown from the game. There are times where I think he gets in his head. It's a maturity thing. He'll deny it. He gets paid a lot of money. He scores a lot of points. Doesn't matter. There's times where he just does not have a control of himself. There was no reason. There was no reason to even put a flagrant push out there at that point of the game last night. You may love it. Yeah, he got fired. He got thrown out. It's going to fire us up. Really? That's what's going to prevent what the Lakers are doing inside. No, it is, why was Frank Kaminsky not back out on the floor? So Dario Saric, done? Played a game? Didn't play a lot? So Monty's trying to do some things, and his rotation gets shorter and shorter and shorter. The facts are this. The Lakers are just too physical inside for the Suns. Jay Crowder cannot do it all on his own. He just can't. And so I look at where this series is and the defense of the Lakers. Here's Frank Vogel about that very subject.
Have that poise and composure when things aren't quite going your way, and have the ability to just like I said, at halftime, let's just have a reset. Let's settle back into who we are and keep the defense performing at a high level. And we were able to turn the game around.
So I loved seeing the intensity of Jay Crowder and LeBron James. I loved it. It didn't matter to me that LeBron was able to get in on Jay Crowder and score. I could be picky and say, did you see the Lakers bench out on the floor They were out on the floor on a couple of those plays. Should have them off the floor. But they're celebrating. They're having fun. That's what fans want to see. If it were Phoenix doing that, then everybody would be up in arms saying, well, look at these Suns players jumping around out on the floor. They would. The intensity was fun to watch last night. Here's Vogel again.
You know, our guys are just competing. You know, we have a scheme in place to try to make things difficult for them and, you know, limit certain things. And, you know, it's not always perfect, but our guys are playing so hard. You know, they're playing with that playoff intensity, you know, that worked for us last year.
Okay, so let's get into Monty's decision to play Chris Paul. Monty's dug in. There's times where I've seen Monty dug in. I like that Monty's dug in and has his own belief system, but he was wrong last night in playing Chris Paul. If he's not able to be on the floor in the fourth quarter, when the game is going to be on the line, when he just was worn down, okay, and it's easy to say this, but I will say I had the stance earlier in the week, don't play him in game three. Okay, now you have 48 hours to hopefully get him ready, and the result was probably going to be the same without him on the floor. And now, hey, look, it becomes a must-win on Sunday. And so is he going to be close to being ready versus, shoot, I wouldn't have even flown him over. He would have fought. I would have said, hey, we'll bring you over on Saturday night. But you're going to stay here and you're going to do nothing. Because what happened in the fourth quarter last night? What did you see? Chris Paul on the bench. Can't have him on the bench if you're trying to get back in this game. You know, people will talk about how great Cameron Payne was. And he's Cameron Payne. That's who he is. He's not Chris Paul. Okay? So if you look at Cameron Payne and Chris Paul, maybe if we talk about series of adjustments, okay? Series of adjustments, Monty's adjustment from game two to game three was, I'm not going to play Dario and I'm going to bring Frank in for a few minutes. That was the biggest adjustment, pretty much. And I thought Kaminsky did some nice things. Maybe if you're Monty, you have to look at this and say, okay, I can't just keep rolling guys out and having us get pushed around. So I'm going to go small. I'm going to go small. I'm not saying that DeAndre Ayton's not going to be on the floor, but maybe I've got to have campaign out there instead of Mikal Bridges. Maybe I go really fast with my tempo. Maybe. Because is Mikal Bridges giving you enough offense? Now, on the other end of the floor, how do you combat 58 points in the paint? Is it just simply wave the white flag, this series is over, it's pretty obvious the Lakers have too much size, they're too strong, oh, by the way, they're going to get the calls. No, it's a series of adjustments. I don't see where playing Kaminsky and Jay Crowder together makes any sense alongside of Ayton. You can't be slow and plodding like the Lakers are slow and plodding, or could you? The one player you look at is Bridges, because you're not going to sit Chris Paul. You're not going to sit Devin Booker. You're not going to sit Jay Crowder. And I don't think you should sit DeAndre Ayton. So if you're going to make an adjustment, is it you bring him off the bench and you're just going to go really small and really quick? Because you can put Cam Johnson out there. You could put all sorts of players in combinations. I'm just trying to look at a way to speed the game up. I think the game needs to be sped up for the Suns. When you've got Marc Gasol and you've got size, all the size that the Lakers, Andre Drummond, right? You got all these bigs that are running around inside or moving around slowly, then speed them up. Speed them up. Go small. That, to me, seems to be the adjustment, but I wasn't happy about Chris Paul playing last night, and now you look at that decision and say he wasn't even on the floor in the fourth quarter. I would get into the Diamondbacks, but, you know, when you lose 11 in a row, there's really not much to say. I feel so bad for Torrey Lovello, but at some point, if this keeps going, and they're playing hard, the last couple games have been one-run games. But at some point, the owner's going to pull the plug. This goes back to everything we talked about in March about, well, we're just not going to extend him. It's not really that big of a deal. If you bring it up right now, what are you kidding me? The players are playing hard for him. Isn't that enough? All right. Tim Mickelson. Getting in the mind of his brother, Phil. Tim was the caddy, is the caddy for Phil, who pulled off the great achievement last weekend. And then Leandro Barbosa on a Friday. I'm Brad Sussmat. Right. As promised, when I was watching everything unfold over the weekend, like so many of you, and I'm getting pinged about this is so great for the Mickelsons. I like the plural there because the Arizona State faithful. No, it's not. It wasn't just about Phil. It was also about Tim, the former Sun Devil golf coach, now caddy for his brother, joins us for a few minutes because you were part of this story too, whether you want to deflect it away or not. It's fine. How has your life changed since Sunday?
I mean, the life hasn't really changed. Just been smiling a lot and been very happy, obviously, for my brother, and just very proud and happy to be a very, very small part of his victory.
Tim, if you could go back on that journey that got you together with your brother, because I remember the story and hearing about it, that you were going to phase out and go into the world of sports agency. And I don't know if people here in the Valley really follow that story that closely. And I'd mentioned it a few places and they're like, really? So how close did you come to not doing what you're doing now and going down that path?
So, I mean, I did go down that path with John Rahm for a year and a half. I was his agent. And when I started caddying for Phil, it was supposed to be a part-time deal. I was just going to caddy for the rest of the year until he was able to find a new full-time caddy. And at the end of our stretch of 9 or 10 events, he offered me the job and I had to think about it very quickly. And I'm like, you know, it'll be pretty cool to be able to be part of Phil's career. And it's something I jumped on. And I do want to say though, that John was very understanding because, you know, John Rahm and I have a great relationship and to not be able to continue working with him because each person needs a full-time, you know, John needs a full-time caddy and Phil needed a full-time, I'm sorry, John needed a full-time agent. Yep. And Phil needed a full-time caddy. And so I had to choose between the two, but John's been nothing but great and understanding and we're still great friends to this day.
How did you navigate that? Was it, and when Phil came to you about this, was it, like you said, you jumped at the chance, but you had to go through some hoops, I'm sure.
Of course I had to think about it because, you know, John was just starting his career and Phil at the time, I think being around 46, you know, certainly not as young as John. And so had to think about that, but there's nothing more important than family. And if I could be a positive influence on his career in some way, even if it was for 5, 6, 7 years, I wanted to do that. And I felt like as his brother, I sort of, I don't want to say owed it to him, but deserved to be part of it.
I had Gary McCord on earlier this week and he said, you know, there's people that could see this coming with Phil. Could you see this coming?
So I saw it coming simply because for the last 4 or 5 months, he's actually been playing really well. He just hasn't been, you know, he had not been scoring well. Mm-hmm. One day, maybe his putting was off and the next day it might've been short game, whatever it was. He just wasn't able to score well. We saw a little bit of brilliance at Charlotte when he opened his, you know, 7 under for the first round. So he and I both saw it coming. We just didn't know if it was going to be the PGA Championship or this week at Colonial or who knows, maybe the US Open. And luckily for us, you know, everything clicked last week over at Kiowa.
When did you feel like it was clicking?
Well, I mean, the way he played the entire week, even just starting on Tuesday with the practice rounds, like you knew that he was really playing well, that things were all sort of the stars were aligning, so to speak. But you still have to go out and execute and you don't know what the wind conditions and all that, but we were very fortunate. You know, he played great all 4 days and it was enough.
So on Tuesday, it's like, this is going to be a good week in your mind, in both your minds.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. I think early in the week, we both knew that it was going to be a good week. You can never say, hey, I'm going to win this week have it happen. But honestly, Brad, 2 weeks ago, we were at a family dinner and he flat out said, I'm going to win again soon because I'm just hitting the ball too well. I'm playing too good. And I tried to rein him in a little bit like I usually do and just said, well, let's just make sure we get in contention on Sunday. And from there, we'll see what happens. But it was literally the very next event that he goes out and wins.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm getting more questions about the mental side, fans asking about that whole mental side that was so emphasized during the broadcast. If you could go into that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, Phil is a very focused individual when it comes to golf and just competition, but he sometimes allows himself to think too far ahead of himself. So, you know, if let's say we're 3 under par through 5 holes, but we still have 4 par fives and the drivable par 4, he, in his mind, he's like, hey, well, if we birdie those and we birdie that, okay, I'll be 8 under. Now what else do I have to do? And so lots of times I just have to bring him back to the present and just say, look, the only shot we have to think about is the next one. But this week there was this just calm presence about himself. He didn't allow himself to get ahead. He never made those comments like he does oftentimes. But I also try to keep reassuring him during the week just to, hey, let's not think about it. Let's quiet our mind. Let's just, you know, we'll worry about the next shot when we get there. And I think that played a big part, that he was able to stay present in the moment.
Are you talking like paralysis by analysis, just overthinking?
Oftentimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, oftentimes just getting too far ahead and thinking, okay, you know, what's going to happen? You know, how can I shoot this? Instead of focusing on the very next shot, because you're just wasting energy at that point. And so in a week of a major, you really can't waste energy and expect to be at your best coming down the stretch. And so we wanted to save as much energy as we could coming down the stretch. And I'm not talking physical energy. Obviously, it's more mental energy.
Right.
And so we were able to do that very well last week. And hopefully it's something that we can continue to do, because if so, it could be a very special rest of the year.
Okay, so how do you balance that then, Tim? I guess it's you're the one that is pouring into him, but at the same time, you have to know, I got to take my pedal off the metal off the pedal there with him.
Yeah, so
how do you balance that?
Something I did last week, and I'll probably try to continue to do, is just talk to him more in between shots, and by talking to him and being engaging with him, we can basically keep each other's mind away from golf. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to think about our next shot for the 250 yards that we're walking up to it. We don't know the lie. We don't know if it's a putt, if it's going to break right to left or whatever. Let's just not worry about it. Let's just talk, you know, how did the Suns do last night? Did you watch the game? Whatever it is, let's keep our mind off of golf until it absolutely has to be on golf. And then let's get hyper-focused and let's execute what we need to execute. And then we can talk about something else.
Where did you learn it in your skill set for him?
I think I learned things like this in general just from coaching for so long, because every player is different. So how John Rahm needs to be coached and talked to during the round is different than Phil Mickelson, which is different than any of the other players that I coached in college. But then just through time being around Phil, the more and more I'm around him, the more and more I get to know him and know what things are going to trigger him in a positive way or a negative way.
Yeah. Your phone been ringing off the hook saying, I can't believe you were there and handling all that stuff. Like, it's had to have been a surreal, cool week for you.
It was definitely a surreal week. Yeah, phone's been going off nonstop. The messages from Twitter and Instagram from people I don't know, you know, saying congrats and how fun it's been to listen to our conversations on the course about clubs and all that. It's been a special week. And any caddy treasures and cherishes a win, but very few get to experience a major championship win, and a major championship win at this level being, you know, 50 years of age. It was absolutely incredible and something I'll remember obviously for the rest of my life.
Before I get you out of here, you alluded to it earlier. This could be a special end of year for him. You feel that strongly about where he is. Obviously the answer would be yes, coming off of what happened last weekend, but you feel like he's set up for the rest of the year.
I certainly do. A lot of people would probably think I'm crazy because you look at the fact that this was his first top 20 of the year, but they haven't seen how well he's actually been playing. And so by continuing to focus on the process instead of the results, that helped us get the win last week. And if we can continue to do so, there's no reason he can't have this be a very special rest of the 2021.
Well, obviously here in Phoenix, I mean, for me, going back and seeing Phil and Amy over on the sidelines at Suns games and all that stuff and seeing you at ASU, it's really cool. And a lot of outpouring here in the Valley, and we hope to see you guys next year here in the Valley perhaps or in the down the road. So thank you for the time and the insight, Tim.
You got it, Brad. Go Devils.
There is Tim Mickelson, and we're back with more after this timeout. Right. I was excited to see Leandro Barbosa's name pop up back on the basketball court. I've seen his name with the Warriors and helping out there, but he is going to be back doing on the court with the Big Three later this summer in July. He's going to team up with Spencer Haas and Brian Scalabrine. Rick Barry is going to be their coach. It's going to be in Vegas. The Big Three Network, or the Big Three Basketball League, I think has got legs to it. So I wanted to have the Brazilian blur, as the great Al McCoy would refer to him. for a few minutes just to catch up. It is good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I can't complain. Thank you for the words. Doing okay, my man. Just finished the season, you know, having a little break with the family, friends, you know, enjoy a little bit of life.
That's great. Big three, tell me about why you're going back on the basketball court, Leandro.
Well, I don't know if you guys know, I recently stopped playing basketball, and I enjoy the Warriors as a coach, mentor coach, and I work a lot with the players, you know, so most of the time I have to play with the players. I have to practice with the players. So Steve gave me that role, you know. It wasn't going to be just a mentor coach. He just wanted me to be on the court with the players, kind of like being on the roster, but not playing the games, you know. So that's my role with the Warriors, and I definitely appreciated that role because I love it. Like I say, I recently stopped playing basketball, and I didn't turn it off the key yet. So a lot of the guys saying that I never should have stopped playing basketball, that I should have keep going, you know. And, you know, for some reason, I wasn't thought about, you know, playing the NBA. So over the years, you know, talking with the Ice Cube, I thought about it would be a good experience to bring the big three to Brazil, you know. So we've been talking to each other for a couple of years, you know. So I thought that it was a plan for me to be on the big three, you know. I also have a lot of friends playing for the big three, you know, and I just heard great things about it, you know. So I said, I mean, a lot of the players on the Warriors, you know, they are my friends, truly my friends, you know. So they've been saying for me to keep doing, so why not? So I thought that big three would be the best option for myself, you know, to keep playing basketball and also having fun. You know, I think this is all about having fun, you know.
Yeah, you've always, when you were here in Phoenix, you were an awful lot of fun and a fan favorite because of that. You played with such a high motor. How good are you on the court still? Do you think have you lost anything, Leandro? Are you a little slower? Can you not shoot as straight?
Yes, I'm 38 years old. I definitely a little slower. You know, I'm not the blur, but the guys on the Warriors still call me the blur, you know. But I mean, I know how to play. I have experience over the years, 15 years playing the NBA. Mm-hmm. I definitely understand that it's a different league. It's only 3-on-3, you know. So I grew up playing that, you know, when I was in Brazil. So it's a lot different than it was when I was in Brazil. I think the rules had a big change. But, I still can play, my man. I don't think it will be a problem. I had a couple of situations that the Warriors was going to sign me for a 10-day contract. It wouldn't be no reason if I, you know, lost all my game, all my step, you know, for them to mention that. So, yes, I can still play.
No, I'm not doubting it at all. What can you do that Steph Curry can't do on the basketball court? Because he's a Warrior. So I have to ask, what can you do that he can't?
Well, I'm faster than he is. You know? He can do a lot of stuff. He can do a lot more than I could possibly, you know, do right now, you know, especially with the ball in his hands. Mm-hmm. But yes, I don't think he's faster than me still.
Nico Mannion played high school ball here in Phoenix. The fans are very familiar with Nico Mannion. What have you seen out of Nico as you're there as a mentor coach with the Warriors?
Yeah, we work together a lot. We became really close friends, you know, for the reason that I know really well his dad. Mm-hmm. And his dad also played for the Warriors a long time ago.
Pace, yeah.
So I know that it was a pleasure for him, his dad, to have Nico enjoy the organization, the Warriors. You know, he's young. He had a tough season for the reason that he didn't have as much time on the court as he wants, you know. But he has talent, you know. He knows how to play. He knows the game. I talked to him about that he's going to have to keep working himself into the NBA. I think this summer is going to be a really big summer for him because he's going to enjoy the Italy national team and he's going to have a lot of playing time with them. And I told him, you know, when you enjoy the national team, as you learn how to play the FIBA games, once you come back to the States to play the NBA, it will be much easier. The game on the FIBA is so tough. There's not so much space like the NBA. That's why I saw one day the Luka Doncic, the interview that he did, that he said that it's so easy to score on the NBA. Yes, it is, but the fact that he's saying that is just for the reason that we play so much FIBA, and the FIBA game is not much space. You can stay on the paint, and it's tough to play. It's more contact. So that's the reason that he said that. And I told Nico, it's a different basketball playing. You know, it's not like the NBA that you have a lot of space. If you get touchy, it's a foul. It's not the same. It's more physical. You will see, you know. And he realized that the summer will be really good for him. We're looking to we're waiting for him for next summer. You know, we want him to play the summer league and everything. I don't know what's going to be his situation as far as when did he come back, you know, because he still have to qualify for the Olympics. But I love to work with Nico, you know, and the other special case is that he loves Arizona, you know. Actually, he's here right now in Arizona, so I love that kid, you know. I got really a lot of respect for him. He's a worker, and I can see that he has the game on inside on him.
Leandro Barbosa with us for a few minutes as we talk about his new venture back on the basketball court, playing with the Big Three. It'll be on CBS Sports Network starting on July 10th. They'll be playing up in Vegas at the New Orleans Arena, and then they'll shift down to New Orleans to be playing the games as well. In Big Three, it's yourself, Spencer Haas, Brian Scalabrine. Do you know those two well? Have you guys communicated and started working out together?
Well, we've been working out together yet. Scalabrine, obviously, he's still on a season with the Boston Celtics. I worked with Scalabrine when I was in Boston for a year. We didn't get together very much, but we knew each other. We play against each other for a couple, you know, years, you know, against each other. So I know Spencer Haas, you know, playing against each other, never talked to him, but we know. And I about the other players, I don't really know. I know Jordy Meeks supposed to be with us as well. I know him as well, but like not a relationship, you know, but I'm excited, you know, for this journey, for this challenge for myself, you know, and you know, I'm ready to go get to the court and play the Big Three.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Before I get you out of here, your days in Phoenix, what did you take most from your days? You mentioned earlier you're here right now, I believe, in Phoenix. What did you take away from your time with the Suns, Leandro?
Man, if I stay here and start talking about the Phoenix, Arizona, we're going to be here for hours. You know, I got so much love for this town, for this city, for, you know, the fans, you know. I wouldn't be what I achieve, you know, if it wasn't, you know, for the organization, my teammates, the fans, all my Mexico fans as well, you know. It was amazing playing here, you know. I had so much fun, and my life changed so much when I first got into to Phoenix, and it just a dream come true. You know, I didn't know my career was going to get longer like that. Mm-hmm. I was going to achieve to be a champion. I didn't know it was going to be that long, you know, but Phoenix was the number one team that I've been with. And I got so much to remember, so much to say of all my teammates, organization and everything, you know, so much work that I put into, you know, to get where I got.
When Al McCoy referred to you as the Brazilian Blur, that stuck. And that nickname still to this day stuck. And I I have never seen a player come into this market, and I've been here almost 30 years, that wasn't a starter, okay? Outside of maybe Elliott Perry that came in and just completely the fan base loved you from the start. What was it? Why, do you think?
To be honest, I you know, first of all, it was a dream come true. Number one, priority. I wanted to get to the NBA. Once I got to the NBA, it was a happy time for me, for my family. And all I wanted to do is work. And once I start getting love from the fans, I decided to myself that I need to make these people happy. Mm-hmm. And I become from a happy person, from a happy family. And, you know, like I said, it changed. Phoenix changed my life, you know.
Yeah.
They being able to draft me, bring it to the States, to the NBA, it just changed everything, you know, for really quick, you know, like the Brazilian blur, you know what I mean? It was a blank, and I was in the NBA. I was with Phoenix. All of a sudden, I was a fan favorite. So to me, it was matter to go out there, put some numbers, make everybody happy. But in order to do that, I would have to work a lot, you know, to, you know, have the love of the fans, you know, maybe not be able to be traded. You know, I never wanted to get out of here, you know. And this is the NBA. At the end of the day, it's a big business, you know, so you got to respect it. That can maybe possibly one day happen. And it happened with me. I was really upset, but I wish I could stay in Phoenix my whole career, my whole time. And it's just a big love that I have for the Phoenix Suns and the organization, the fans. I can't forget about.
Who helped you most on the court? The teammate that helped you most on the court?
Well, number one, it was Stephon Marbury, you know. But I can say that all my teammates, all the guys that I played with in all my years that I was with the Phoenix Suns, they all helped me. They all helped me. I can name Tom Gugliotta, Scott Williams, Penny Hardaway, Jalen Rose, Jimmy Jackson, then Amar'e Stoudemire, Sean Marion. You know, I was the youngest, you know. Then Steve Nash came in, and he's one of my best friends till now. You know, actually, I was talking to him before I started the conversation with him, you know. So I have so many teammates and guys that really helped me when I was a young and, you know, treat me as a man, try to, you know, teach me the good points about the NBA. And it's just unbelievable. But like number one, for sure, Stephon Marbury, he really helped me inside the court and outside the court. Then Steve Nash became the priority after Stephon Marbury left. I still have a relationship with Stephon, but not as close as we used to be. Mm-hmm. The closest one right now that I have, it's Steve Nash until today.
When, and I'll get you out of here off this one, the coach that helped you most in Phoenix?
Mike D'Antoni and Dan D'Antoni. Dan D'Antoni was one of the biggest reasons for me to have the Sixth Man of the Year. Not only himself, of course, the whole coaching staff, but the most, he used to be 24 hours with me inside the court and outside the court. Mm. He used to bring me a lot of notes. At that time, I didn't really speak English really well. So he used to bring me like a piece of paper for me to, you know, read before I get to the court, know my role, know what I supposed to do, minutes that I was on the court, you know. And of course, Mike D'Antoni, he trusted myself. He gave me confidence, and he had confidence to keep me out on the court, you know, to, you know, give it what he needs, what the team needs, and willing to help the team. So I just have to say thank you to Mike and Dan D'Antoni that, you know, really believe in myself, you know, to help the team. And also I got the Sixth Man of the Year.
That's awesome. It's awesome stuff. It's good to see you. It's good to catch up with you. And I'm looking forward to seeing you on the basketball court schooling guys. That sounds like you're going to have a lot of fun in the Big Three this summer.
I'm having fun already. You know, I already start working myself in getting shape. I'm very excited because there's a lot for me to learn. It will be good experience for myself. All my people in Brazil also, you know, backing me up. So I can't wait to get on the court, you know, and see a lot of the old players that I play against, you know, and you know, put some numbers on the court.
Leandro, thank you for your time today.
Pleasure.
There is Leandro Barbosa, and we're back with more after this timeout.